Good morning. Welcome to another edition of Shattering Myths, where we, hope to bring you news that might rock the foundations of what you've been taught in the past. I'm Larry. I'm going to be sitting in for Yada today, who's on a much-deserved vacation. And I'll be working with Scott. How are you doing this morning, Scott?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. I'm just, you know, kind of boggled. My mind's boggled over here. I was reading out of the Canada Free Press about the Graceless Princess, which is Michelle Obama.
Michelle Obama, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently she looks at the American taxpayer like her personal Amex. And she's really part of the entitlement group. You know, and I find it interesting that, at the G8 conference, the bankers, they've gotten together and they've decided that they'd turn their attention away from the Syrian rebels that they'll be arming and have armed, and now they're telling us they're about to arm. And they've turned that away from the Syrian rebels to tax cheats and tax evaders. Do you suppose, Scott, maybe Michelle doesn't have enough money to spend? You know, they're kind of light on the cash?
It definitely sounds like it. It's also a weird thing to turn from. I don't think lives hang in the balance due to tax cheats.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, they turned literally. That's the story. They turned from looking at arming the Syrian rebels. And one of the things that they decided to do, I think, with these fellas is they're going to go ahead and waive the background checks and the 3-day waiting periods as well. You know, something Americans couldn't get. You know, I mean. And then turn this thing into, the wringing of hands that somebody might be cheating them out of tax dollars. And, with tens of millions of Americans either underemployed or out of work and many fighting to save their homes and hoping for some kind of a retirement that's really never going to come, you'd think that the First Lady might be a little more circumspect. When she's traveling at the taxpayer's expense, she apparently went to Dublin and set herself up in the Princess Grace Suite, which is $3,300 a night. And her entourage, and I guess these are the people that her media spin people and the people carrying her luggage and shining her shoes and so forth, took another 29 rooms.
Well, that's nice. $3,300 a night, huh?
Yeah. She's in the Princess Grace Suite.
The nicest house I've ever stayed in. That's 2 months' rent right there. So that's how I look at that.
Yeah, well, you know, it gets to a point. Yeah, of course, I'm sure she spends, a lot more on her breakfast. You know, this is just the room cost. But, we're at a point here where it's becoming obvious that there's the elite and then there's you. And it appears to me that the goal is to stratify the society, eliminating the middle class and having just the elite and the unwashed masses underneath who can't question anything.
Who can pay for the elite?
Well, they will pay for the elite, but they can't question anything. You know, I'm 53 years old. It's gotten to a point, over the last 25 or 30 years that I don't recognize the country that I was born in, or at least what I was told within the public school systems. It appears that America is more red than red China. You know, based on the tax codes, over in China, the highest tax rate you could pay is 30%. And And then you don't have all these additional fees, you know, and like county taxes and then city taxes and property taxes. I mean, the highest rate you can pay is 30%. But I think that the average American, when you start throwing in phone bill taxes, electric taxes, property taxes, sales taxes, gasoline taxes, taxes on clothing items, anything that's non-food, income taxes, Social Security, I think probably the average American is somewhere around 45%.
Which is absurd. I never thought I'd hear the day in my life where it would be like, well, you could probably make more money in China. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. I never thought I'd hear that.
Well, of course, the elite, you know, you look at the Warren Buffetts of the world that tell the rest of us we need to be paying, you know, a higher tax rate, and that they're all for paying a higher tax rate. All this while he's in court fighting, you know, not to pay taxes. I think his effective tax rate, I read, was 2%. 2%. And so what you really have with these people is a situation where, you know, don't do as I do as I say. And, you know, it's becoming, you know, somewhat laughable that a first lady, in order to speak to maybe upwards of 1,000 kids, and watch a river dance, has to bring a 30-room entourage and stay at the most posh hotel in Dublin. All at the taxpayer's expense. And this is at the same time while her husband disingenuously, you know, due to sequestration, stops tours to the White House because of the expense. I mean, it's pretty obvious that the hypocrites that are running the show, you know, it's the old thing where the king has no clothes on. I mean, is everybody seeing that? You seeing that, Scott?
Yeah, I see that. A little bit.
A little bit?
A little bit. I see it a little bit. I mean, I know what you're referencing, and nobody questions them. So if nobody's going to question them, until somebody stands up and says, hey, he's not wearing any clothes, everybody's going to be like, oh, it's a great thing.
Well, you know, I'm seeing more and more fear. You know, as I talk to other business owners, I hear a lot of fear in their voices. And then, you know, I begin to talk to them. And everybody seems to be aware of what's going on, and they seem to be, you know, fairly frightful about it. And, you know, what I think it gets down to is that, you know, when you go into the public school system today, you're kind of, you know, it's an indoctrination program is what it really is. And they're not in there teaching, you know, rhetoric and critical thinking. And, you know, they're in there teaching you what their version of history, and they're socializing you.
It's been that way since the 80s.
Yeah, well, probably since before that.
Well, and people also look at school differently now. I mean, they send them there because it's daycare. You know.
Yeah, it's kind of a daycare program. You know, keep them busy, keep them marching out in the center of town square in lockstep with their hands reaching in and out of their pockets at regular intervals. You know, voting to tax themselves because we need more education. And I think if I hear one more politician or political actor come on with the line, we don't spend enough money for education and we need more education, I think I'll just throw up.
Well, why not direct the money that we're sending elsewhere to education?
Why not stop funding education to the degree that we fund it? I wouldn't. I mean, you talk about throwing money overseas. Of course, that's a waste of our hard-earned money. That's what wars are about.
Why not hold the teachers accountable for what the kids do or do not know?
Yeah, why not do that? Why not defund the public school system? You know, who said there had to be a public school system to begin with?
Well, yeah, there doesn't have to be. Like I said, I think people nowadays look at it differently than what it was, you know, back when my dad grew up. You know, it wasn't, for him, school wasn't, you know, a place that he had to go every day. It was his job, basically, you know. That's what made it so he could get a job when he got out.
Yeah, well, that may be. Yeah, they've certainly, you know, stacked the deck in their favor. But, you know, back to, you know, this fear that I hear in people's voices, I don't think that even as little as 20 years ago, people were aware, nearly as aware, of what the powers that be are doing to them and how little they listen to them. You know, everything's lip service when it comes down to the people, you know, in Babylon. You know, they stand up, they do a little magic show, and then they tell you how much they want to take care of you, basically. That's what I'm seeing. And, of course, it's all just lip service, and people now are beginning to understand we were taught in this public school system that there was a system of checks and balances. But, you know, it's beginning to look more and more like there are no checks and balances. And that's kind of a scary thought because when you get down to that, you have a dictator.
It's it's just a circle of friendliness. There's no checks and balances. They're not trying to keep each other in check. They're all so fearful of what the other one can do that they just go along with everything. So it's pretty sickening because there is supposed to be checks and balances, and a checks and balance is where I make sure I know exactly what you two are doing and why you two are doing it.
So, yeah, but yet, you know, I mean, yesterday you were going over the whole PRISM operation. And, you know, if you look up Main Core, and you can see it right on Wikipedia, Main Core, you'll find that the government has been listening to us for years and years and years. It's not just, you know, this new program they're doing, because as of 2007, they had a list of 8 million Americans. This is according, you know, to the writing in there, 8 million Americans that were to be sent to re-education camps in the event of martial law.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It says here, Main Core is the code name of a database maintained since the 1980s by the federal government of the United States. It contains personal and financial data of millions of U.S. citizens believed to be threats to national security.
Isn't that wonderful?
So, more on Main Core, Larry. It says here that it's a. It contains personal and financial data of millions of U.S. citizens believed to be threats to national security. The data, which comes from the NSA, FBI, CIA, and other sources, is collected and stored without warrants or court orders. That sounds great. The database's name derives from the fact that it contains copies of the main core or essence of each item of intelligence information on Americans produced by the FBI and the other agencies of the U.S. intelligence community. The database is believed to have originated with the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, imagine they'd be in this, in 1982, following Ronald Reagan's continuity of operations plan outlined in the National Security Directive.
So we have another directive.
Definitely.
Now, you know, another directive, not a law, just a directive, an executive directive, to go out there and spy on Americans. And for whatever reason, and it might be reasons very trivial, even according to the article you're reading, we could be put into a list of people.
Well, it gets better here. As of 2008, there were reportedly 8 million Americans listed in the database as possible threats, often for trivial reasons, whom the government may choose to track, question, or detain in a time of crisis. The existence of the database was first reported in May 2008 by Christopher Ketchum and in July 2008 by Tom Sharrock.
Wow.
Yeah, that's good.
That's amazing.
8 million Americans listed as possible threats, often for trivial reasons.
Now, I want you to consider something here. That was as of 2008. I think I said 2007 or earlier. 2008.
Yep.
5 years ago. Now, with the explosion of things like Drudge, you know, which can be tracked. Everything you do on the internet is tracked and filed somewhere. With FB and some of the things that I say on FB, and I know I have probably 2,500 people on my page, and those people, the things they say when I look at them, you know, they're, you know, a lot of them are pro-liberty, anti-big government.
Well, they're probably on this list.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, imagine how that 8 million figure has exponentially increased by the year 2013.
Well, it's probably gone up. Everything.
Oh, I'm sure it's gone up three or four times that figure.
All the programs under Obama have been ramped up, though.
Yeah, so, that's right.
So
that's
I assume that there people are going on that list at an astronomical rate.
I would think so. I mean, people, bureaucrats are paid to get people underneath them and get more and more and more and more power within the government. In other words, let's say that, you know, in a private business, let's say I have Scott and one other fella doing a lot of work and doing a lot of production. And that's how we make our company live and advance. But in government, it works the other way around. Let's say I have Scott and I only have one other person. I don't get a lot of funding for my department and I don't get pay raises and I don't get advanced because I don't have enough people underneath me. So I have to come up with reasons and programs in order to hire more and more people and get them underneath me, see? So, yeah, if I'm sitting here, if my goal is to come up with reasons why this particular person or group of people might be a threat to the government in the event of a national emergency, and I'm the person, by the way, that gets to call an emergency, you know, it doesn't have to go through any particular group of people right now. Barack Obama can declare an emergency, can't he?
You can go through the super secret court.
Yeah, sure. I don't even think he needs to go through the super secret court anymore. I think he's got a directive there where he can just say it's an emergency.
Bypass it all?
Sure. It's an executive order. And then, you know, we've got 50,000 people or 50 million people or 30 million people, bare minimum 8 million people, that we can, you know, we can put them away in the internment camp. And, you know, I don't say these things lightly. It's, you know, we've come to a point where we have to understand there is not such a thing as American exceptionalism. And by exceptionalism, I mean it can happen anywhere except America. We've seen it happen throughout history time and time again in Stalin's Russia and Mao's China, Hitler's Germany. And we are not going to be the exception. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. This is Larry. I'm on with Scott. And we'll be happy to take any of your calls. Scott, what's the call-in number?
It is, let's see, I believe it is 1-877-376-45.
And feel free to give us a call if you'd like to chime in and let us know how you feel about more government in your life, the fact the government's spying on you, or even the fact that they're calling this fellow that stepped forward and exposed what was going on a traitor. I saw Dick Cheney. And let me tell you something. I was a staunch Republican. Matter of fact, I was on the executive committee of Duval County's Republican Party in Jacksonville, Florida. I used to support Dick Cheney. I actually saw a video, and this was coming out of Dick's mouth, and you can Google this if you want. Dick Cheney admits to being CFR member. That's Council on Foreign Relations. And if you really know what's going on in America today, you understand that the CFR stands as America's lone political force. They control both sides of the aisle. Well, you know, they're putting you through. There's an act so you can feel like you're rubber stamping, or I guess you are when you go out and vote. You're rubber stamping whatever it is they do to you. You're begging for more of it. You know, as evidenced by, remember the fellow Brown up in Massachusetts that was elected to the Senate, Scott? You remember that fellow? Then he was a Republican, and, you know, the Tea Party went out there, and they got Scott Brown, that was his name, elected to the Senate. And then it turned out he was just another liberal rubber-stamping everything that went down the pike.
Yeah, well, there's another, the IRS scandal. They just released the transcript for that, and it turns out that the person that was the rogue agent was a conservative Republican.
Oh, it sounds to me like the only person doing any spying might have been the conservative Republican. I guess that's why he was involved in all those groups, so he could figure out who to go after. You know.
That's right. And then what was it? Yeah, it was either yesterday or the day before that the FBI finally admitted that they used drones on American citizens.
They used drones on American citizens?
Yes.
And haven't they ordered 20,000 drones that are to be up in the air by the year, what, 2017, is it, or 2020?
Something like that, yes.
Hmm.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? 20,000 drones flying around watching you.
I feel the same about that as I feel it here. I actually have the a clip for it. Give me a second here. I am not a proponent for drones, but here's the FBI admitting to using drones.
Does the FBI use drones for surveillance on U.S. soil?
Yes. Well, let me just put it in context, though, in a very, very minimal way. And very seldom.
This is a very minimal way, Larry. I mean, there's only how many of them going up in the air?
That's a relative term.
Yeah. Very, very, very minimal way.
Yeah, right. These are the same guys. These are the same guys that go up and they sit down and they lie to Congress. They get caught lying to Congress. And then they bring them back up for another hearing. And apparently this is to make us feel like, well, this has all been put out in the open. It's all been aired. And then what ends up happening? Do programs get changed? No. Do people go to jail?
They misremember.
Not from what I can
see. They misremember things.
Yeah, yeah. But they had to stand up there and they had to sit down in that chair and put up with like an hour and a half grilling from a panel. That's designed to make you feel better, like, okay, this is all out in the open now. But all they've really done is moved it out in the open so you can get used to it. They don't change anything. Nothing changes. And so that's the situation we find ourselves in, and that goes back to the whole checks and balances that really aren't there. I mean, let's face it. You know, today, you know, people use the term liberal, and then liberal is you know, supposed to mean, oh, I'm open-minded. I can accept anybody no matter what. And it's supposed to mean I love all races and I love all cultures and I love all sexual preferences. None of these things bother me. You know, isn't that what liberal as equated to being, when it's actually a voting bloc that believes in the liberal use of government. And when you say liberal use of government, you mean more and more government. And that's the problem that we have.
Well, both conservatives and liberals now both want more government.
They believe in the liberal use of government, don't they?
Well, they definitely do. And they prove that by the way they vote, the things that they try and make happen, and the things they allow happen. Their actions speak louder than any words they can ever use.
Well, I agree. I mean, I agree with that. And I think the more that you consolidate power, and we find this all throughout history, the more you have a consolidation of power, the more that power is abused. Isn't that true?
Oh yeah.
I mean,
always. And that's why it's horrible that the checks and balances have gone away, because now you're making whoever president to be czar of the United States.
Yeah, and we have a lot of czars too under this guy. And I mean, this is the most recent guy. I mean, we could have said the same thing about Bush, who was busily signing away our rights and our freedoms under the auspices of helping us.
And Obama was going to stop all that.
Safe.
He didn't think that was right, and he was going to stop those programs.
Well, I've come to find out with Barack Hussein Obama that you can listen to what he says, and you can expect the exact opposite.
Again, actions are louder than words every time.
Yeah, but now his words give him away. So when he stands in front of a press conference and he says, as an example, we're not listening to Americans on their telephones, okay? And he holds his hands up, and he kind of looks at everybody for a second and does a pause. What he's telling you is, we're listening to you on your telephones. That's what I've come to find. And of course,
when somebody actually shows us evidence that that's happening, it immediately became that person's a traitor.
Well, you know, that's interesting, because I saw a clip from Shia LaBeouf. You know who Shia LaBeouf is, the actor?
Shia LaBeouf, yeah. Yeah, he had that clip on, I believe it was Leno, where he talked about an NSA guy sent him a clip of him having a conversation with his girlfriend.
Yeah, from several years earlier.
Yep.
Yeah. He said, oh, no, we can pull anybody. It's voice recognition software, and they've had this stuff around for many, 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 many years. And so, you know, when a guy comes out what's his name, Snowden? Is that his name? Right. And he,
yes, Snowden.
Yeah, and he exposes what's really going on. Suddenly we have people like Dick Cheney, who is an admitted CFR former director. Matter of fact, I saw him in a clip laugh about that. He said, it's good to be back here at the CFR. I'm a former director. And then he said, something I failed to mention to the good voters of Wyoming. And he went, well, yeah, because you're a liar, Dick. And when you call a guy a traitor because he's sitting there exposing to the American people that laws are being broken and that they're being surveilled around every corner, I think the guy's a hero, and I think those that call him a traitor are people that are just into the status quo of the elite.
Well, they're not just doing it to us. They just came. Didn't the report just come out that they were also the UK and the US spy agencies targeted heads of state at the London G20 meeting? So
they
spy on everybody.
They spy on everybody, and if you're a spy. Let's say I'm a spy, and this is why this program is directed to see what Scott's thinking, what Larry's thinking, what our neighbors are thinking. It's not about catching spies.
I have a feeling if they want to know what you're thinking, they could probably just ask Larry.
Yeah, well, they could ask me. You're right, and I'd pretty much tell them. But the point is that if I were a spy, I wouldn't. And if I were a spy or it's somehow involved in terrorism, I wouldn't say the things I say openly on radio shows and on Facebook. A spy takes another tact. He presents himself as another person publicly, and then privately, you know, when he needs to have a meeting, he's going to take all kinds of countermeasures because he's well aware that these programs are in place to listen to people on telephones. He's well aware that there's all kinds of spy equipment that can be aimed from, you know, how many ever miles away, and they can listen to what you're saying. You know, if he was being targeted and he was a spy that was really interested in, say, stealing nuclear secrets or, you know, something worthy of a spy, maybe it's economic espionage, whatever it is, he's going to be meeting some guy out on a bridge in the middle of the country. And that's where they're going to do their talking.
Well, and even that's not going to work anymore because they're going to have drones.
Well, you know what? He's going to have to worry about that. I'm not worried about that. The point is, he doesn't get on a phone and have a conversation. He doesn't get on a radio show and broadcast the way he really feels about an intrusive and ever more growing government that seems to be more focused on surveilling its own people than to cleaning up its own act. And so, you know, that's where we find ourselves today, and it's not a very good position to be in. And that's, again, why we're seeing more and more fear out here with the American people. And what the American people are going to really need to do is just stand up and begin to question all these people who call themselves our rulers when they're really supposed to be our servants. Last I checked, you know, these were public servants. They all say, I serve the public. I've spent 40 years of my life serving the public. Haven't you ever heard that from these people?
Yes, I mean, definitely. And people need to stop giving up their rights in the perception of safety. Like, people telling you to stay in your house is not because they're trying to find one man. That's not something you want to do.
Yeah. You mean the old Boston trick.
Exactly.
Welcome back to Shattering This. I understand we have Glenn on the line. Welcome, Glenn. What do you got to say here?
I wanted to address the drone thing. I live in the northern suburbs of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and for all my life, we've had a little naval air station here right on a major road here, right in a densely populated suburban area. This was mostly during the Cold War, one of the main East Coast bases for the Patriot Orion sub hunters. Had lots of those in and out all the time, lots of C-130s. And, you know, this been for a few years now, it's been mostly closed down. I think they maintain some sort of, you know, they maintain the grounds and have some sort of skeleton presence of some couple little units, weekend warriors. And mm-hmm. The status of this thing's been kicked around a local government and everything like that. And they were going to make a civilian airport of it. But to make a long story short, I just read a story in a little local paper that it's going to be reopened in October, supposedly as a drone control base, you know, where the guys sit and play the video games and fly these things.
Well, you know, they're going to need such things if they've got 20,000 of them.
No, you're not hearing me. I said not a drone deployer. No. A drone control base. They're telling us it's only going to be where the guys sit and play the video games. Okay? let me finish. Let me make the point here. They just so now, if they were just wanted to control them, they could do that from pretty much anywhere, you know, because it's
sure.
all satellite stuff. However,
sure.
Just coincidentally, they happen to pick a facility that just happens to have a runway that can accommodate anything right up to C-5s and B-52s, but on bump, the other shoe drops. So they're feeding us this thing that it's just going to be for controlling them. Well, if you think, I believe that for 1 minute, and they didn't pick something with, you know, or right on the East Coast that, you know, in a densely, you know, in the suburbs of a big city that happens to have a huge runway on it, I'm not that stupid. You know what I mean?
Well, yo, I hear you. I mean, it's obvious to me what's going on there. And again, you know, they're going to need places like that with runways if they're going to have, you know, 20,000 drones. I mean, even, you know, obviously there are some states that are densely populated, others that are sparsely populated. But if you know, you take 50 states and you divided it equally, which isn't going to exactly happen, but, you know, you're talking about 400 drones per state.
Yeah. these are low and slow loitering things, you know, and I don't know if they can air refuel or not. But, I mean, in other words, they're selling us the idea that they're not going to be any drones stationed there, that this is just going to be a control facility. And they're like, I'm not believing that for 1 second, you know.
Well,
they come up
and,
you know.
And, I mean, they got to have a little place to land their drone. I'm assuming it doesn't take much of a place to land a drone. Either way, they're indoctrinating people. They're telling people right now, we are going to have drones watching you. I mean, it doesn't matter to you whether they land there or whether they land somewhere else. I mean, how many counties does your state have? Maybe 30, 40?
I don't know.
And you're going to have 400 drones per state? I mean, you could have, in each county, you could have 100, you know, you could have 20 drones flying around.
Well, yeah, but I'm looking at it more in terms of population density on the East Coast. We're right smack in the middle of the Boswash. You know, they can be to New York, and, you know, the thing could be up, you know, to New York in 20 minutes. You know, mm-hmm. as the crow flies, it can be down to D.C. in about an hour probably or something, you know.
Well, yeah, and of course, the more densely populated the area, the more drones, right? I mean,
you would think, yeah. I mean, sir, if they want to go out and surveil, you know, farms and ranches, you know, they could just head west, you know, due west. And you know, I'm sure they have multiple duties. I've heard of them checking out farms and ranches and auditing, you know, cattle and stuff like that, you know, and looking at crops and things like that, you know.
It's getting very bizarre, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I'm just wondering if there are going to be people, if these things are going to be swooping down and popping, you know, air-to-surface missiles down on dissidents on the roads at night, you know?
I don't know what they'll do with them. They can do anything with them they want. But, I mean, if you've got 40 or 50 drones flying in your county, they can pretty much surveil and watch everything 24/7, can't they?
Yeah, they do a lot with satellites already, but I hear the music. Take care, guys.
Yeah, thank you, Glenn. Appreciate the call. And we'll be back after the top of the hour break. This is Larry and Scott at Chattering Mist.